So I do know that we didn't quite finish the basic chemistry chapter, but I forget exactly what slide I was on. Do you know from your notes? Oh, so we're past this. And I already talked about ATP. Okay, so I didn't really talk about this yet. 36 is a picture of a really important molecule in biology. This is ATP. This is not ATP. This is actually AMP, but the reason this is shown is for a different reason. What we're looking at here on the left, this whole big thing, which consists of these three parts, is called a nucleotide. Nucleotides are important because they are monomers, or building blocks, for a polymer. Right? Just like monosaccharides are monomers to build the polymers that we call polysaccharides, nucleotides are the monomers that we string together to form the polymers that we call nucleic acids. So DNA and RNA, which are the two major kinds of nucleic acid, those are both made by stringing together a bunch of these. And by a bunch, I mean, in the case of DNA, millions, making up one molecule, one big polymer. So a nucleotide is a building block. But a nucleotide itself, even though it is a building block, it consists of three things, as you see here. There is a 5-carbon sugar, and actually that's what makes the difference between DNA and RNA. The sugar for DNA is deoxyribose, that's what the D stands for. In RNA, the sugar is ribose. But in any case, you have a sugar and then two things attached to it. A nitrogen-containing compound or nitrogenous base. And that's why there are different kinds of nucleotides, by the way, because there are 4 different kinds of nitrogenous bases that DNA uses and 4 different kinds that RNA uses. On the other side of that same sugar is a phosphate group, which is this phosphorus atom and 4 oxygen atoms. That's called a phosphate group. And so that's one reason that these are important. They build nucleic acids. And 37 shows you a picture of the most famous nucleic acid, DNA, actually the most famous molecule in the world nowadays. Everyone has heard of it, even though not everyone knows exactly how it's built. Well, you can see here that, this is just a tiny part of the overall length of a DNA. An enormously long DNA is what is in each chromosome. You're seeing just some nitrogenous bases here, but like I said, there are literally millions in one long DNA. But a DNA is really 2 polymers in itself, 2 polynucleotides. A polynucleotide is a string of nucleotides that we just looked at. And a DNA, a deoxyribonucleic acid, which is what that stands for, is really 2 polynucleotides, like 2 ribbons that you see here. Each one of those is a polynucleotide. And these C's, T's, A's, and G's, those are the different kind of nitrogenous bases that are parts of those nucleotides that are strung together. Okay? So these 2 polynucleotides are associated with each other via what are called hydrogen bonds. That's what these little black dots represent. And so overall you have what is called the double helix. A helix is a corkscrew shape. It's a double helix because each polynucleotide is its own helix, and there are 2 of them, so it's a double helix. But you can think of it kind of like a twisted ladder. Because, you know, if you untwisted this, it would look like a ladder, with these being the rungs of the ladder. And the 2 important jobs that DNA performs, which we'll get back into in the next chapter, are replication, which means copying itself, and transcription. We'll talk more about these a little bit later. But it's a really important molecule, obviously. Well, in 38, here is where we have a picture of ATP that I thought we were on earlier. ATP is also a nucleotide. Notice it has the sugar and the nitrogenous base and a phosphate. Well, if you could have more than one phosphate and still be a nucleotide. ATP is important just by itself as an important energy-carrying molecule in all cells. So, not every energy-requiring process in a cell, of which there are many, uses ATP as the source of energy, but most of them do. And so ATP is often described in textbooks as the energy currency of the cell, by analogy with currency, money, which is a good analogy because, you know, we don't work, whatever our job is, whatever we put effort into, we don't work directly for our needs, for food, for housing, right? Instead, we work for money, which represents our effort. And then that money is a versatile currency because we can spend it on whatever we want to pay off. You know, to use that effort we put into it, we can use that to pay off in a lot of different ways. Similarly, we don't use the energy that comes in as our food directly to perform those energy-requiring things that the cell needs. Instead, we extract the energy from the food and then store it temporarily in the form of ATP molecules because these are versatile. And these can then be, the process can be reversed by removing the energy from ATP. That energy then can be used to perform these energy-requiring activities in the cell. So it's like a middleman, energetically speaking. And the reason that it's able to store energy is because of the multiple phosphates that it has. And you can see that what's happening on the bottom is a hydrolysis reaction. Remember we talked about those? Using water to split a big thing into smaller pieces. Well, that's how you get the energy that was stored in ATP back out of ATP. By breaking a bond between these two phosphates at the end. And that turns it from ATP, adenosine triphosphate, because it has three phosphates, to ADP, adenosine diphosphate, with only two. Breaking that bond releases that energy, and that energy then can be put back from food into this by reversing this process. Sticking that phosphate back on creates ATP. That's how we store the energy, and that requires the energy that came from the food. So the food energy is like making a deposit on a debit card. And then using the money on the debit card is like this hydrolysis of ATP, which releases that energy to do things for the cell. Okay, let's go to 39. This just shows you some major ways in which ATP functions to provide energy for cells. It can do chemical work, which means it can cause chemical reactions which wouldn't happen ever on their own because they require energy and they're therefore uphill. It can force those things to happen. Just like I'll use that analogy in a different thing. So chemical work is one way, causes chemical reactions to occur that wouldn't happen otherwise. Transport work refers to specifically what's called transmembrane transport. Trans means across. So transmembrane simply means moving things through a membrane either into a cell or out of the cell. Living cells need to continuously exchange materials with the environment. So they need to bring things in that they need, and they need to get rid of wastes all the time. Well, sometimes those things will not be able to be moved through the cell unless you force them through, and therefore ATP can be used. And then mechanical work simply refers to moving parts. This is how your muscles work, for instance. Every time you move your body, it starts with you having an intention to move. Like, I decide to bend my elbow, right? That's the only way it works. Well, that starts out as nervous impulses, but those nervous impulses then signal the muscle to contract, which is an energetic process. It requires energy for that to happen. So ATP is what provides that energy in allowing the muscles to contract, and that moves the forearm, right? Bends the elbow. Okay, that finishes up that chapter. So that's a quick recording.